Did you get everything put in?
I didn't realize it was tax day until I said April 15th.
Strange that it's tax day. I've always been one of those responsible folks who gets it done as soon as possible.
I got my taxes started so early I couldn't get my taxes done because various people hadn't gotten back to me with my tax documents yet. So I had to wait on my taxes, including the government. The government hadn't gotten back to me with vital documentation, so my taxes were delayed, but I have gotten everything that I need to get gotten in, gotten.
Got it.
So happy tax day, folks. I hope things are, going well out there in the magical land of, inflation isn't so bad since we changed the numbers 20 years ago to make it seem like they're lower. That's brilliant.
The ever changing the ephemeral consumer price index, you mean?
We literally in the 90s during the Clinton years changed how we measured inflation so inflation would look better going on. So you can't directly compare inflation numbers from the 70s to today because they changed how they count inflation. They like excluded a whole bunch of, really, and let's be perfectly honest, these are really unimportant things that hardly matter to your average consumer, like food and housing and transportation costs,
Oh,
things
yeah.
nobody
Well,
pays attention to.
you know why those were, besides being totally unimportant to the average consumer, you know why they were excluded, right? You know what the justification is?
Have no idea.
They see, they don't give a good, accurate representation of inflation because they're so volatile. I'm not making that up.
Oh,
The excuse
God.
by bearded economists in ivory towers.
Oh.
They're just, it's too volatile. You don't really get a good picture of real inflation. So yeah, don't worry about that stuff.
Yeah. So, anyways, so rest happy, folks, knowing that inflation isn't really happening and, you're not really sorry. I literally have family members telling me, oh, yeah, I've had to stop driving this one vehicle and start driving this other vehicle because gas prices are so high. And that was before the Iran thing happened. I was gone from Twitter for one day. One day I go away from Twitter. I see two movies about war, and I come back to Twitter and somebody starts a real war. What the hell?
Yep.
Every single day, I'm not making this up. Every single day I leave Twitter, I'm gone for Twitter for like 12 hours or 24 hours. I come back and something major has transpired. And I don't mean something major in like the comic book community or the science fiction and fantasy. I mean like somebody somewhere in the world has decided to hold something big. Like there's a tsunami somewhere or a gigantic earthquake or a nuclear power plant, something. Every single time. And I'm beginning to feel like this is a little bit personal. I'm beginning to feel targeted. It's like I leave Twitter, something breaks somewhere, and I'm wondering if this is meant to capture my attention. Is this the world trying to tell me something?
It is trying to tell you something that you need to never leave Twitter again.
Never leave Twitter. I feel like that's a really unhealthy attitude to cultivate somehow.
Yeah, well, it's either that or the end of the world as we know it, so.
Yeah. Yeah, if I ever, you will know that I have finally left Twitter for good if the planet suddenly explodes. You're like, oh, there it is. Betty Whoopin left Twitter. Boom. It's all over. Daddy Warpig leaves Twitter, women and poor people, hardest hit.
I see what you did there.
So, sorry to pause there to take a drink from my, fortunately, this time, I don't know if it was last week or the week before that, where I carefully prepared my mug of water and then left it upstairs this week. I brought it downstairs. I have it here, lovingly prepared, sitting by me. I didn't make the same mistake again. I won't say twice, but this time I didn't make the same mistake. Because that's the best you can hope for in life, is not that you'll never make the same mistake again, but this time you didn't make the same mistake you did last time. And next time, you'll worry about next time, folks. This is literally real life advice. All you can hope is that you did this time as good as you can, and let next time worry about next time. I've stunned
you. Sound advice. Yeah. I can't beat that advice.
You came around a corner and unexpectedly found something deep and profound.
Man, I thought we were still going to talk about dumb movies today. I'm not here for the profundity.
I apologize, folks, for the out of character deep profundity of the show. There you go. You have been spiritually fed. It's truth. You should take that with you. Do the best you can this time and don't worry about it. And if you didn't do as great as you thought, well, do your best to leave it behind. Do the best you can next time. That is literally great life advice. And the fact that I don't follow that all the time or most of the time should not stop you from doing your best.
Do as I say, not as I do.
We actually had this conversation, I think, the last time we spoke. We had the conversation, not on the air, mind you. We actually do talk off the air. It's kind of shocking. But you wanted to talk about something else.
Hey, why don't you ask me how my week was?
How was your week?
Great. I didn't mention it last week, but this past week was the 13th darn near annual Bone Bat Film Festival,
which we talk about every year.
Every year we talk about it. The Comedy of Horrors. Our good friends with the Bone Bat Show, Stephen Gord, put on a whole film festival. It's something like 11 straight hours of Comedy of Horrors, so it's dumb, stupid, goofy, gory, bloody films, mostly short films, spread out throughout the entire day, and it's awesome. I went with my wife, and we had a great time hanging out, watching the films, and there's a couple of things. I want to say that I'll be honest, I didn't like the films as much as I liked them last year. But we had another film by the same guy who did the best film last year. There was one short film that you would have liked, Daddy Warpig. It was a little short about this post-apocalyptic wasteland. It's shot and staged and filmed like a zombie movie, but it's more like it's also feels like A Quiet Place. It's a young woman and her dog, and you know, they're alone in this wasteland, and they go, you know, investigate her grandparents' house, you know, you know, she suspects that they're dead, and but it's not zombies, it's aliens from another dimension, and they are invisible. And unlike a lot of zombie movies, a dog making noise is not a liability because, of course, the dog can detect the supernatural, including the rifts with that the aliens come through into our world. So I had some cool special effects, and being zombie movie adjacent, like it's written in that style or filmed in that style, I think you personally would appreciate it a lot.
That sounds really cool. I mean, just the idea sounds really cool.
Yeah, and it was well done. In particular, everybody enjoyed the how well-trained the dog was, pretending that it was, for example, being held down by an invisible monster. The dog handling was really cool. Let's see. Another thing which was one of my favorites was the 5-second films. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard of 5-second films.
It's exactly what it says on the tin. The folks, people make very short films that are up to 5 seconds in length. And so the Boneback guys, they pulled a bunch of comedy horror and or comedy horror shorts. And I tell you what, it's like a comic strip. You get someone, if you have asked someone to make a film in 5 seconds, they have set up punchline in less than 5 seconds, and they were almost all hilarious. I think you can find them on Twitter and TikTok and stuff. So you may be able to just find more examples of them, but they were a lot of fun. They were sort of like quick palate cleansers in each block of films. They did like 10 in a row every few hours. And it was really fun. Let's see, what else? I can't really come up with any other. The animated features. There's always animated features. My favorite was an animated feature from Canada about Santa Claus being hauled in on suspicion of committing murder. Of course, it's really some sort of supernatural thing, but you got to watch it to find out. That was a lot of fun. And what can I say? It was a good time. There was one really big downside to it. Warpig.
It was Canadian?
No, to the whole show.
Oh, okay.
I do not miss going into Seattle.
Oh, has Seattle gotten bad?
Yeah, it's been bad and it's getting worse. It's not a pleasant place to go. It's probably not New York City levels, but close. No, had a great time. Awesome hosts. Fun films. So I recommend it.
That's, you know, I have heard similar sentiments about other cities like Portland and New York. And it's sad. It really is. It makes me, well, big cities don't have to be pigsties. If you allow me to wax poetic in my country boy manner.
I can't stop you from waxing poetic, but maybe skip the country boy manner.
It's just, it's sad. Because American cities used to be, you know, I mean, we have whole songs, whole lines and songs, thine alabaster cities gleam, undimmed by human tears, about how great American cities are. And they used to be beacons to the world. But American cities were beacons for a reason, and those reasons were dependent on things that kind of, as a country, decided we'd rather do something else, and so we threw them away.
It's a pity. It's a pity. So, yeah, don't go to Seattle unless it's for the Bone Bat next year. Really looking forward to it. Really enjoyed it. What about you? I heard you had some interesting stuff to go over.
Some news. They released a Star Trek Outlaws. It's a new video game by Ubisoft. They released a trailer for it. It looks terrible. Absolutely awful. People have been savaging it online. Have you ever seen The Warriors, the movie?
Only that one scene.
Where he's clinking the glass bottles, Warriors come out to play?
Yep.
Good, because that's the only scene I'm talking about. The main character, who is a female girl boss Han Solo, looks exactly like that guy. Like, uncannily exactly like that guy. Or a cross between that guy and Matt Damon in Team America World Police. If you've seen Team America World Police, it looks off of people. The writing in the trailer is the most generic girl bossery writing that you can imagine. It is painful to hear. And it's gotten rightfully savaged. So people are, I'm predicting that this is going to be perhaps as successful as the last Ubisoft game to come out, which was, it wasn't Sea of Thieves, because Sea of Thieves was good, but it was the game that was trying to be Sea of Thieves, but wasn't, and I can't even remember the name of it now. Pirates of Your Wallet, or Pirates of Microtrans. No, I'm not doing a bit. I literally can't remember the game now. Name of the game now, but anyways. It was awful. People hated it, and they had to release it because it was the game they called Quadruple A Gaming. They had to release it because they made it in Singapore with millions of dollars in subsidiaries from the Singaporean government. And so because they got subsidies, they absolutely had to release it no matter how terrible it was. So it came out. It bombed. I expect this game will perhaps do as well. It is sad what video games are turning into. All of these consulting firms are terrible. The games they influence turn out terrible. I was playing Call of Duty Vanguard last night, and I don't know if I'm going to review it or not. But it is apparently another one of these games that was written under the influence of a DEI consulting firm, and it's truly just almost painstakingly painful in its awfulness, how bad it is. It is a constant blizzard of tiny little stupidities in large and small ways. And I don't know what it is. I can't say, but every time you take a step towards focusing on ideology all of your skill goes right out the window. You stop thinking of things in terms of comprehensible cause and effect. You stop thinking of what makes sense and start thinking of politics and ideology, and you just make something that is so bizarrely stupid that, I mean, this is the one thing I remember from last night. I walk into a barn. There's literally like five or six Vermont I'm having a firefight with. And I kill them. And I walk out of the back door of that barn. And kneeling in the mud outside the door of the barn, less than like 5 or 6 feet away, not on the other side of rubble, not on the other side of a hedgerow, not down a lane, not on past a building, literally past a few feet of mud, are 8 or 9 other paratroopers on my side who could hear these Wehrmacht shooting at me. Through open windows and doors, and could easily have engaged them. They were literally right there. Now, maybe I have overjudged the commitment of friends and fellow soldiers in the military. But I would like to think that if a group of paratroopers in the open, in a clearing, kneeling, surrounded by burning bushes and fires, so they are literally silhouetted by flame, they can be seen for miles away. Anyone with a telescopic sight or binoculars or anything so advanced as a pair of functioning eyeballs can literally see them for 5 or 10 miles off, and they're not worried about it, and they're less than 10 feet away from screaming krauts who are actively shooting and yelling in German in Western France, where they've parachuted into on D-Day. I would like to think that they would view that situation as something perhaps to take action on. These are supposed to be SAS soldiers, Special Air Service soldiers. Now, I'm not British of nationality. I'm British extraction. My ancestors were British and Manx and stuff. That's right. We're mixed family here on the Gab. He's Irish. I'm British. We make it work.
The odd couple.
I would like to think that perhaps SAS soldiers would view that as something to maybe do something about. Does that seem to you to be an outrageous assumption on my part?
No. Seems a little fishy to me. I think they're working for the Germans.
I couldn't believe it. And then my guy, the soldier you're playing at this moment, is a medium dark complected black man. He's a black British soldier. And I mention that not because it's a racist thing, except that when he steps outside the barn, the first line these British soldiers say is, "We almost took you for a kraut." We thought you were a Nazi.
I'm like,
What?
What is happening?
you thought he was a Nazi? He could literally have been dressed in lederhosen with a wreath of Edelweiss around his neck, singing "Horse Vessel Laid," dancing the Stadtluder, and you, no one would mistake him for a Nazi. He is the least Nazi-looking person in all of Western France on D-Day, okay? You have in your squad a female Russian sniper who wears a full Red Army uniform, including communist insignia. And she looks more like a Nazi than Arthur Kingsley. I just couldn't believe it.
Better believe it, man.
I just was like, look, I make fun of the British because I make fun of everybody. I make fun of the British, I make fun of the French, I make fun of the Canadians, I make fun of people from Detroit and LA and New York, I make fun of the Irish because I like making fun of people. You can testify. I've made fun of the Irish in your presence.
It's terrible.
I'm an awful human being. I'm an awful, awful, awful human being. But even making fun of the British as much as I do, my low opinion of the British does not extend to them seeing a black man in a British uniform in a clearing filled with burning fire. No fog. Flames that are literally, and I'm not making this up, I'm not exaggerating, there's this huge circle of fire. This place is lit better than Wembley Stadium at full daylight. Okay, that last might have been an exaggeration. And there's no obscuration. He's in a full British uniform. My low opinion of the British does not extend to SAS soldiers seeing him and thinking, that's a Nazi, shoot him, okay? It just isn't going to happen. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. Then there's the Gestapo guy who shows up later in an SS uniform. I can't even with this anymore. just couldn't even let this anymore. They're in Gestapo headquarters, and the guy's interrogating them, and he's got an SS insignia on, and they're like, he's the Gestapo, and I'm like, no, he's not! Right. I see the collar! The collar is not... So, anyways, I was playing that yesterday.
Yeah, you... this is what you get. There's a new boycott initiative started by Mark Kern. We talked about him probably 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
he's had enough of everybody's crap. He's suggesting a AAA game boycott for a couple of years, which is weird. He has some really interesting data to back it up. You can find him on Twitter at Grums. Supposedly he's talked to a lot of insiders and CEOs in the game industry, and they are actually feeling the burn. This isn't like get woke, go broke, where nobody actually goes broke. The game companies are actually vulnerable to a little bit of boycott, which would be interesting if true. And of course, we should all stop paying people who hate us anyway.
So anyways, I've only played three sections, but the first section was this big train battle, and it was a lot of fun. It was silly. The setup is absolutely just monumentally dumb. But the train fight where you're advancing on two trains and you're having to jump back and forth between them, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. I'm not saying it's a terribly designed game all the way through, but, oh, tearing my hair out. I was like, I just don't understand where it goes, right? How simple, small, basic things, as soon as you go DEI, or now they're trying to call it bridge, because DEI became, they started with DIE, and that was like 6 months before they realized, oh, that's a mistake. We better call that DEI. That sounds bad. We named that Die. That could sound bad. And I'm thinking, you think Die sounds bad? Because you're literally killing companies? Die? Yeah. But that only lasted like, what, 2 years now? And so now they're calling it Bridge. Bridge.
Is that what they're calling it? Never heard it.
That's like 3 weeks now or 4 weeks now. It's been bubbling up into the consciousness. 2 weeks. I don't know. So, you know, I'm wondering if the next thing that's going to counter that is like Bridge to Nowhere, because that's a callback to Alaska and the waste of government money for those of you who, you know, can remember 2008. So, yeah. It was on sale. It was really cheap. I've been playing a lot of World War II, Call of Duty. I pulled Call of Duty 2 and Call of Duty 3 out of retirement. I've been playing those and enjoying those. It was on sale last night for like $25. So I said, oh, might as well buy it, see how it is. I could not imagine how bad it truly was. So I guess that's a full review or at least a partial review of Call of Duty Vanguard. Literally making me weep tears of blood, Call of Duty Vanguard. But it goes along with the war theme today.
The war theme.
Yeah.
Speaking of war, the Battle Bronsteins have not stopped. The guys, the D&D guys are talking about it on Twitter, including folks like Bradford Walker's in the chat. Hey, what's up? Simon Hogwood, how's it going? Dunder Moose just had a show about another Battle Bronstein. He's talking to all the Brownsteiners. You know a little German. How do you say that? Brownsteiners.
Brownstein is perfectly acceptable American pronunciation, because I think the German pronunciation is Braunstein. Braunstein.
Braunstein. Yeah. So we're doing the Battle Brownstein thing in Trollopolis again. The inimitable Macho Mandolf's running something this week, so we'll have more details on that coming up probably next week. I don't know if I'm going to do a Battle Brownstein. Trollopolis already has two, so I might be off the hook there. Don't tell B-dubs. But we're playing D&D as a war game, and it's been a lot of fun.
Oh, I'm glad I got that off my chest. That Call of Duty Vanguard thing has been weighing me down since last night. So I watched Civil War. The new movie by Alex Garland. And I also watched the Fallout TV series. And I know I announced I was going to do Three Body Problem, but and I did watch, I think I've watched about half of Three Body Problem on Netflix, but then Fallout came out and there was so much talk about it. I'm like, I'm just going to have to watch Fallout for this week, because otherwise it's going to be completely, you know, spoiled for me, and that's what everybody's going to be upset about. Sure enough, it's what everybody's upset about. So I decided to watch Fallout instead. And apparently there's also a Chinese language version of Three Body Problem available on Amazon called Three Body. So I may literally watch Three Body Problem twice and talk about both of them for next week.
Good luck. I made it after the first episode. I think I checked out of that one.
The Chinese language one or Three Body Problem?
Three Body Problem.
Oh, I've gotten all the way through, I think, episode 4, so.
I don't know how you did it, but you've watched worse for less.
I got through the second episode of Discovery. The fifth season of Discovery, I watched that second episode. It was painful. The third one's out. I haven't watched it yet. And I want to tell you, it's because I watched, you know, Civil War and another movie on the same day, but it's not. It's because that second one was so awful. I don't know that I want to go back. It was so bad. I will say this. The one big benefit of how awful Halo Season 2 was, and I still haven't finished that third episode, the one benefit of how awful Halo Season 2 is it made Discovery look good. Let that sink into your mind. Let the horror compound there for a second or two. Now let's talk about Civil War. I think I watched a different Civil War movie than a lot of other people watched. And I think I watched Civil War is a really a lot more subtler movie than I think a lot of other people are expecting. And it is, it is something which just is right now, and it's not hitting as hard as people expect it to, and I think that's because the director made the movie to speak to as broad an audience as possible, because he valued what he was trying to say, and he's trying to get as many people as possible to understand what he's trying to say. And in doing so, he leached out a lot of what would make it maybe hit harder. So let me explain. For those of you that don't know, Alex Garland's Civil War is literally about a civil war in modern day America. America has broken into four factions, and it's set in the last, at least the last two or three days before the federal government, the last two or three days of one phase of this civil war. There are hints that it may be going on after that. We don't know. But definitely one phase of the war is concluding and another one may soon begin. And people are complaining that it's doesn't hit hard because the movie doesn't comment on modern day politics and doesn't take a stand on modern day politics. Left-wing critics are complaining because the movie isn't taking a stand against people they dislike, like Trump or MAGA or conservatives or whatever. Right-wing critics are, or even, you know, who would normally be even-handed right-wing critics are complaining because the movie isn't saying anything about modern-day politics. And the movie is intentionally not saying anything about modern-day politics because this isn't a war, this isn't a movie about politics. This is a movie about a civil war in America. The point of this movie is not the politics that caused the Civil War. The politics that caused the Civil War could have been, you know, the American Football League versus the National Football League, and people are trying to kill each other over it. It could have been baseball versus basketball, and people are trying to kill each other over it. It could have been tastes great, less filling, and people are trying to kill each other over it. And the movie would remain exactly the same. It's not about left wing versus right wing, or even alt-right versus conservative versus left wing, or communist versus capitalist. The movie is literally about Americans killing other Americans in the streets of America. It's about American cities turning into Mogadishu or Lebanon or pick your favorite, you know, war zone. And I am not trying to blame critics or blame viewers who don't come away with that. But one of the characters, and this was even in the trailer, one of the characters straight up says, every time I covered a war in a foreign country, what I thought was doing was sending a message back to America saying, don't do this. And she means, and this is Kirsten Dunst's character, she means not don't go to war in a foreign country. She means don't go to war with each other in America. don't pick up guns and start murdering each other in the streets. And people have pointed out, you know, all these political divisions or the political map doesn't make sense. And it's true, it does make sense, but that's not the point. It's irrelevant. And people have also pointed out, well, in a real civil war, what you would have is pockets of people here and pockets of people there, and they would be fighting left and, you know, fighting each other. More of a Stalingrad kind of situation than what happened during the historical civil war in the 1860s. And this movie, the scenes that occur in this movie would fit that scenario perfectly as well, because it follows these four journalists on their journey from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. And along the way, they travel from pockets of area controlled by one group to another group, and they see various aftermaths of battles or ongoing battles or ongoing skirmishes. They see literal war crimes being committed or what could have been the aftermaths of war crimes or might not have been. They see people who are executing foreigners or someone who is holed up in a place who's a sniper killing people for maybe they received an order and their orders have expired, or maybe they're just shooting people because they're trying to protect themselves and they're holed up and they're afraid of anyone coming closer. Or maybe they're crazy and they're just shooting anyone because they like shooting people. It is, you know, they see a suicide bomber who comes running into a crowd of protesters and blows themselves up. They see and experience and people get hurt and killed. They see all of these scenes of war. They come into a city that's kind of at peace, but they see what they've had to do to stay at peace and stay out of the war. Refugees in a refugee camp, people on the side of the road walking from one place to another. They see a couple of aid workers from what is a UN agency trying to bring food in. They see a final assault on a government building and the diehard soldiers protecting the VIP. They see someone who is basically executed without trial, who's a leader of an opposing faction, just shot dead in the street. And people keep on saying, well, I didn't care about these characters or whatever. I didn't care what was going on, or it was meaningless to me. And I feel like what I was watching was a different movie, because what was going on screen at the time was not horrifying. Maybe because we've seen it in fiction so many times, in movies like Black Hawk Down or American Sniper or Generation Kill, but because these were scenes we have seen in so many other places that are other places, but these are happening in identifiably American cities, in identifiably American people killing each other. And it was absolutely plausible and tangible. You could almost reach out and touch it. And so what I was left with at the end of it was this immense feeling of disquiet. This is not an action movie. This is not a movie with heroes. This is not a triumphant movie where the forces of good score victories over the forces of evil. This is not a movie about good and evil. This is about Americans murdering Americans in the streets of American cities. And we are at a political moment where there are people who identify as right and people who identify as left who are openly wishing for, openly wanting, openly asking for another civil war. And I would suggest that those kinds of people have no idea what they're asking for. They have no idea what they're thinking about. They have no idea the kind of horrors that would be visited upon them, that would be visited on their communities, that would be visited on innocent children, that would be visited on innocent families, that would be visited on American prestige, on the world, on just about every person on the planet if that were to happen. The point of this movie is not who is right or wrong. It is not who deserves the most blame for starting the war. It is not who is more at fault for being vicious in politics. It is not whose politics is more or less correct. It is that war is literally a horrific, terrible, brutal, ugly thing. And if Americans got to the point where they started engaging in another civil war, it would make Rwanda look like a picnic. And even though the movie didn't go there, and this is not a particularly gory or bloody movie, he did not go, this is not a Saving Private Ryan beach scene movie. He did not go out of the way to make it look like, you know, buckets of blood or gore were spilled on the screen. And maybe that's why it hasn't hit as hard with these people. The point is, we're Americans. And this is something to devoutly abhor. This is something to be devoutly repelled by. Deeply repelled by. This is evil to want a civil war like this. This should be disquieting. No matter where you are on the spectrum, we should stop wanting a civil war. We should stop wanting to kill each other in the streets. It is a tragedy. This movie is an ongoing tragedy of world-shaking proportions seen from the ground level by these four characters, who are all, you know, three of them are veteran combat journalists. One of them is a wannabe combat journalist who just is starting their career out. They want to... They're witnessing this tragedy from the point of view of a small, normal person. This is not a general's view of a tragedy. This is not a soldier's view of a tragedy. This is a witness's view of a tragedy. And
so is there, so the viewpoint characters, they're four journalists.
Yes.
Is there any protagonist or anything in this film? Is there any conflict, or is it a series of vignettes or something?
Well, it is, I guess, technically, it's what they call a buildings Roman. It's a journey. And they go through a series of events on their journey. And they have, like, the girl starts off, there is one girl who's 23 in the film, and she has never been a combat journalist before, but she wants to be. And this is her first chance. She really idolizes she wants to be a combat photographer. She idolizes Kirsten Dunst's character, who's a veteran combat photographer. And so she kind of talks her way onto her team as they're driving from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. And so she's going through all of this. She's going through war for the first time. She's never been in a war. She's never seen a war from this point of view. So she's seeing atrocities and soldiers being shooting each other and being shot at all for the first time. So we see things from her point of view that way, and we see things from Kirsten Dunst's point of view. The actual reporter, the interviewer himself, is a veteran, and he's kind of an action junkie. He does this because he finds it thrilling. He likes being a war journalist. He likes being in the thick of action. He wants to go towards where the bullets are flying. And the last character is an old, old journalist. He's been in this for longer than anybody. You know, he's been in this since before Vietnam. He's been a reporter since the 50s, probably. And so he has a different point of view. They don't spend a lot of time dwelling on that. And maybe that is something that another reviewer pointed out that I watched. Was like something they felt like was missing was more of their point of view on war. That they could have drawn out is how they've seen other wars in other places and how that colors their points of view. The protagonist, if there is one, is Kirsten Dunst's character. She's the main character in the movie. You mostly stay with her through this, and she is weary because she's seen war, mainly global war on terror. She's seen Iraq, Iran, things like that, or at least conflicts that are like unto those, because this is set in some indeterminate future. She's seen conflicts overseas in other countries that are like those without specifically mentioning those. This is not necessarily a modern, it's not necessarily set in the modern day, today, 2024. It's just set with modern technology.
Okay. So is there any point to any of the stories other than, you know, don't kill each other?
Yes, there is a story about Kirsten Dunst's character and what she goes through. There's a story about the young journalist and what she goes through. And the main interplay, the main human drama in the middle of this is how this young idealistic, and I don't mean idealistic in the sense of politically idealistic, just this young excited girl who idolizes Kirsten Dunst's war photographer and wants to get into to that as a profession. What happens to her as a result of what's going on, how her personality changes, how her character changes, what she goes through as she sees this, how terrifying things are, and how Kirsten Dunst's character undergoes some changes, things like that. That's the main dramatic, you know, in the sense of drama, in the sense of character interplay, background of the movie. And in that sense, that story is a little weak. It's not as strong as you might wish to carry an entire movie. And the the conservative commentators I've seen, and I've only seen a couple, but the conservative commentators I've seen have laughed because they're saying everybody mocks reporters nowadays for good reason. So having reporters be people who are main characters is kind of seen as ridiculous. But it's clear that Kirsten Dunst's character actually is dedicated to the news as news. She's not trying to slant it one way or the other, primarily because there isn't any politics to slant one way or the other in this movie. So she is... So the human drama at the center of the movie could have been stronger. And maybe that would have drawn out what's going on in the movie more.
Mm-hmm. And you said the stuff we saw in the trailer wasn't... I mean, the stuff we saw in the trailer was absurd. I mean, let's be honest. This is a movie titled Civil War being released in an election year, and the trailer shows this, you know, MAGA American type asking, okay, what type of American are you? You're saying that's not the movie we got?
No, this is not the movie. That is not the movie that we got. That is not what the movie is about.
Interesting.
This is not a movie about how January 6th protesters tore the country apart. That is absolutely not what this movie is about. And believe me, I noticed very, very small details in this movie that went completely unremarked that nobody else has mentioned, but that I noticed. Like, there were a group of guys, most of the people in the movie, or a lot of the combatants in the movie, are dressed in military uniforms. There's some of the rebels from the California-Texas Alliance are using Chinooks that have, I think, 10th Air Cav Iron Horse insignia on it. So there are actual military units who have rebelled against the federal government. But at the same time, there are a lot of civilians who are geared up in, you know, bulletproof vests and carrying M4s or other weapons that are fighting. And there's one unit of skirmishers who are all wearing Hawaiian shirts, which is indicative of a group of a particular political group. But nothing's made of that. Nothing's mentioned of that. They're not highlighted in any way. They're just there as another group of people involved in this. They're not presented as any better or worse than anybody else. They're just another group of Americans involved in a skirmish. There's another group of guys who are wearing military uniforms, but their hair is dyed in different colors. And I don't know if that's like an unofficial uniform or if that shows what side they're on. They might be part of the Florida Alliance. They might be part of the Westerners or the Northerners. Nobody knows. You don't know. The audience doesn't know because the movie doesn't tell you. So when I tell you this isn't about January 6th, this isn't about Trump being in a bad man, this isn't about that. It's because I noticed the details in the movie that would have let you know that that's what's going on. And then they're not there. I paid attention for small details, and the small details, you know, aren't there. It is just a movie about Americans killing Americans and how much of a tragedy that is. And if the drama at the center of the movie is kind of weak, it's because it's just a really small, it only seems weak in comparison to all the big events happening around it. If you focused on that and put it in the middle of a movie about, you know, the invasion of Iraq or something, I don't think anyone would notice. I don't think anyone would have said anything about it. It's just that everybody seems to want more. Everybody seems to want there to be sides in this. Everybody seems to want there to be some political point to this. And the director just seems to want to make an anti-war movie. And anti-war movies are usually anti-Western movies. Let's be perfectly honest. Anti-war movies are usually movies criticizing capitalism, criticizing what we call Western democracies, criticizing free market countries, whatever. They're almost always criticizing Great Britain, France, America, the Allies, whatever. Because dictatorships don't allow anti-war movies to be made or broadcast. So like George Orwell said at the beginning of World War II, or during the first years of World War II, to be anti-war is objectively pro-fascism. But if you're going to make an anti-war movie, I cannot think of a better subject for an anti-war movie than an anti-American Civil War movie. And I mean in a modern American Civil War movie. A movie that is anti-American Civil War. Because I am anti-Civil War. America does not need a civil war. We do not need another civil war. And if I can venture in a meta-political opinion, whatever we can do to amp down the intensity of hatred in our culture to move us away from this potential future, whatever we can do to stop hating each other so much that we want to kill each other, or to stop pushing ourselves, to stop egging each other on towards this, is a good thing. Before a fight breaks out, a lot of guys will stand around egging each other on. They'll stand around saying, "You can get him. You can take him. Oh, yeah. He can't do anything to you." They're trying to work each other up. And it seems to me that a lot of what's happening in the American political sphere right now is we're egging each other on towards picking a fight. And whatever we can do to amp that down, to draw back from that, is a good thing. And I don't know if that's what Asgard Garland saw. I don't know if that's what he's thinking about. I don't know if that's why he made the movie. I have no idea what's in his mind. I just know that that's what I got out of this movie. And there isn't any other, in terms of a message, the only thing that comes from this movie is war is a horror devoutly to be avoided. Sometimes it's necessary, but in this case, in this country, it is absolutely not. We absolutely, absolutely should not go to war with each other. It is horrifying to contemplate. So maybe I'm being bamboozled because the scenes themselves were so horrifying to me because I care about America so much. And the two reviewers that were on the right that I saw were both British. And so it didn't hit them as hard. But this is not an attack on right-wing America. This is not an attack on Trump supporters. And it's not an attack on left-wing America either. And that's why the liberal, the left-wing reviewers I was hearing reviews from didn't like it. It's because they wanted it to be an attack on somebody. If it was an attack on left-wing America, they could hate it. If it was an attack on right-wing America, they could love it. But it's not an attack on anybody. And so everybody's all confused about where it fits. And my opinion, my statement is, it fits above all that. It's an attack on the attitudes that lead us towards civil war in America. And that's something everybody can kind of take home. Don't. Literally, the character says this in the movie. Don't do this. That's the thesis of the movie. It's stated right out. So that's my review of Civil War. It does exactly what it's supposed to. It makes you feel, and even all these reviewers, even all these left-wing reviewers were like, it left me feeling disquieted. It left me feeling nervous. It left me feeling upset. I'm like, it's supposed to! That's the point of the movie. It should leave you disquieted. That's what it's trying to do. So on that level, yeah, maybe he nailed exactly what he was trying to do. Make you feel disquieted. Make you feel upset. Make you feel unnerved at the thought of this happening in America. I don't know. That's my review of Civil War.
It's certainly not what I expected. Also, I was talking at mute again.
Oh.
It's certainly not what I was expecting to hear. So, interesting. What do you think? There was one other thing you wanted to talk about. Shall we move on?
Yeah, we can move on. I'm done.
Now, the next thing that we're talking about is something I actually don't really know much about. I have never been a fan of the Fallout series. Not for any quality reasons. I just never really played them.
You don't like Bethesda games, so.
I don't like Bethesda games, but I also tried Fallout 1 and 2 on good old games. And I don't know if Bethesda made them, but they're not Bethesda games as I know Bethesda games.
No, they were made by a different company who lost the rights. Bethesda licensed the rights, and then they sued Bethesda for some reason, and then they lost the rights because, you know, the contract they signed said, nope, can't do that. So, might have been Interplay or something, I think.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I was never into it. And apparently, there's some people unhappy with this show, but I'll let you take it away. So they made a Fallout series, I guess.
It's okay. It's 7 out of 10. It's not great. The characters really don't act like human beings most of the time. Walter Goggins is awesome. He does great with really mediocre material. The three main characters are a female vault dweller. I think her name's Ella Purnell is the actress who plays it. And Walter Goggins plays the ghoul who is a bounty hunter of sorts. And then there is Maximus, who is a squire from the Brotherhood of Steel. Brotherhood of Steel's whole deal from Fallout. For those of you that don't know, Fallout is a satire of the 1950s. It's a satire of the 1950s technology where they literally have like nuclear-powered cars with nuclear reactors in them, and robots. So it is strictly not meant to be taken seriously in that sense. The nuclear bombs have dropped. They've got giant ants, radioactive water, super mutants who are big, huge guys. They've got rad scorpions who are as big as cars. They've got rad cockroaches that are as big as dogs. They've got bloat flies who are, you know, flies that actually fly in the air as big as dogs. They've got aliens that land. They've got Lovecraftian horror things that happen. It is a grab bag setting that is not really meant to be taken seriously. And the Fallout TV show tries to build an edifice on top of it that it cannot sustain because they try to take it seriously. Something that is just not made to be taken seriously. You can't stick all those elements willy-nilly in on something that was not meant to have a comprehensive background. It was not meant to fit together. It was just a bunch of different references stuck into a fun role-playing game. In the original Fallout 1 and 2, and Bethesda kind of just carried on with that. And then that's it. That's what Fallout is. I mean, you have a... There's just really bizarre things that regularly happen in Fallout, and it's almost a lulzful random setting, which is fine. That's what the fun of Fallout is. I mean, you have robots with human brains in them. And a dog with cybernetic parts and things like that. It's just, they're trying to make it this serious thing, and they're trying to make it this serious thematic thing about, oh no, capitalism, blah, 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 destroyed the world, and communism is just, it's open communist propaganda at some point during the show. Communism is just the phrase they use for people who aren't insane. I think is a quote. It's close to that. I'm not quoting it exactly, and I apologize for that. That gets thrown out in episode 7. The origin of the war is retconned. It's implied that all these companies get together, and there's going to be some spoilers for what comes up and what I'm going to say. It's an okay show. It does okay. The people don't act like human beings. At one point, this innocent girl from the vault who's been sheltered in her entire life and is really, really naive and is raised in this kind of idealized 1950s world is nonetheless has a severed head she's carrying around with her for reasons that make sense. But then instead of hiding it away and not thinking about it and just doing her best to pretend she doesn't have it, she literally pulls it out and sets it on a stump next to her and talks to it. I'm like, no, that's not what happens. If you're trying to take this seriously, the show tries to have it both ways. It tries to make this a serious commentary on capitalism and how capitalism is evil and how communism is better, while at the same time doing things that just make no sense. And a lot of things about the show, the dialogue is so wonky that the show skipped things past reviewers that I caught. And again, I'm wondering if I watched the same show that other people caught. The girl says at one point in the very first episode, what she says is, relations with your cousin is fun for a while, but it is not a viable long-term sexual practice.
What? Played straight.
Played straight. And that's why she has to marry somebody from another vault. So, apparently, I'm the only one I've noticed that the show is implying that this big dumb galoot that she can't marry because he's her cousin is literally someone she's saying, no, we can't get married, but it's been okay having sex with you.
That's disturbing.
Because no one else has mentioned this. And I wanted to go back and rewatch that for the show, for this show, but that would mean going back and rewatching it. And I just didn't want to do that. So that makes no sense. The show just does not nail its... If you're going to satirize 1950s culture, you have to satirize 1950s culture. You have to nail it. And what you have to nail is them being really, really, really sexually repressed, right?
I guess. I mean, that's the classic Hollywood satirization.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think... I doubt that's what the 50s were like, but that's the Hollywood formula for sure.
And so, no, it's not what the 50s were like. It's not what the 40s were like. It's not what the 30s were like. You just have to watch the movies. I mean, literally, you know, the jokes, the double entendres, Humphrey Bogart taking someone over his knee and spanking her in African Queen and other places. In Gilda, where she says, you know how to whistle, don't you? You just put your lips together and blow, things like that. They were not sexually repressed. They fail at satirizing the 50s because they're trying to do this weird thing of, well, realistically, in the vaults, of course they'd be having sex with their cousin. I'm like, dude, what? So they...
That sounds like someone made up after posting on Reddit.
So they're caught between wanting to have the message and wanting to and so doing that ruins what they're trying to do with their show, ruins the artistic effect they're trying to achieve. They're pushing the message so hard that they ruin the effect that they're trying to achieve. If you've played Fallout, they absolutely nail the look of Fallout, and that's what people are talking about. Oh, it looks exactly like Fallout. It does look exactly like the Fallout video games. They've got cool combats. The special effects are great. A lot of the world-building things are really silly. They introduce new ideas that completely break existing lore. They retcon the New Vegas game because Bethesda is still colossally, atomically butthurt over the fact that Obsidian Entertainment, who were the people that originally created Fallout 1 and 2, after Interplay folded, founded Obsidian Entertainment. And Bethesda went to them and said, hey, would you make this Fallout game? We don't have a game coming out in these next couple of quarters. We really need a game to slot into this, so we want you to make a Fallout game. You've got 18 months. You literally have 18 months to take the Fallout 3 engine, this crappy Bethesda creation engine, and slap something together and go. And they made a game which is still to this day, everybody says, is so immensely superior to Fallout 3 that they took like 5 years making. And you could literally take the Death Star and use it as an anal suppository on Todd, who's the developer of, you know, the Elder Scrolls and Fallout 3, you could use the Death Star as an anal suppository, and he would not be as butthurt as he is over New Vegas being so much better received than Fallout 3, which is why New Vegas is not receiving the upgraded treatment that Fallout 3 will be getting vis-a-vis Unreal 5, which is why they are so classlessly angry every time New Vegas comes up, which is why when Obsidian came to them and says, hey, we notice you don't have any games come out, we'd like to do an Elder Scrolls, you know, offshoot or spinoff, and then they were like, no, we don't want that. So Obsidian went off, and now they're making their own original fantasy role-playing game, which we'll see. They've lost all of those original people, so Obsidian hasn't done as good a work, because any organization is only as good as the, is only as moral and is only as skilled as the individuals making up that organization. So when you fire the talented and skilled individuals, your organization goes to pieces.
Many such cases.
So Bethesda is still so colossally butthurt over Fallout New Vegas that they're completely retconning Fallout New Vegas out of existence and saying Fallout New Vegas never happened. It never existed. So that is this game is a this show, the Fallout TV show, is a solid 7 out of 10. It's got some great combat. Walter Goggins does a great job. Ella Purnell does a really good job. A lot of the writing is bizarre and inhuman, but you expect that from modern people. The open communist propaganda was a bit shocking. These are the most evil capitalist corporations ever put to film, and their plot is more insane than the Resident Evil game's Umbrella plot. And you know what the Umbrella Corporation plot is, right?
Wasn't it just super soldiers?
Not even super soldiers. It's like, hey, why don't we create giant monsters? Why would we create giant monsters? Profit! The plot of the capitalist corporations in the Fallout TV show is more insane than step one, giant monsters, step two, step three, profit. It's more insane than that. Spoiler warning, it is literally step one, nuclear war, step two, step three, profit. Because, and I'm not kidding, this is the spoiler. Sorry, folks. Spoilers for the show. Their plot is to kill off 6 billion people, and that will make them rich.
Interesting.
Because companies who sell products to individual consumers become rich by killing all the people who buy their products.
It's reasonable.
That's how economics works.
I do remember that from my Econ 101 class. It's got to do with the supply and demand curve when, you know, the population approaches zero. I think it's some infinite users hack.
That's their plan. Oh my gosh. I couldn't believe that. The literal line is said with a completely straight face, we drop the bombs ourselves. That's the line from the show. I'm not making this up. This is not an... Now, it's not directly stated that they actually did start the war. That's just their plan. That's their plan. Is as a company, yeah. So, anyways, I don't know what to say.
Sounds
open
stupid.
Communist propaganda caught me by surprise. You don't often see open communist propaganda. You don't often see people saying communism is innately superior to capitalism in this day and age. You literally don't see that nowadays very often. It's kind of crazy to hear people saying. The 100 million dead victims of communism kind of, you know. But hey, here's a fictional world in which capitalism killed 6 billion people. So that proves that capitalism is worse than communism.
QED. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It has to be true.
QED. Quad. Erat demonstrandum. Case closed. So anyways, it really is a 7 out of 10. There's mutants, there's monsters, there's some fun fights. And it's an enjoyable watch. I'm not saying it's terrible, but oh man. Just some of the things that are going on are absolutely insane. And I can't believe no one but me has mentioned. I don't know why I get so hung up on it. Maybe it's because of the weirdness of it. Oh, and at one point later in the show, like Ella Purnell turns to Maximus the Knight and says, just kind of casually, do you want to have sex? Just out of nowhere. And I'm like, what?
That's weird.
What? And then it's never followed up on again. She never asks him again. They never...
This is definitely a Redditor's wet dream.
Like, later on in the show, they kiss at one point, and it's implied to be romantic. And I'm like, it's kind of hard to go back to having a chaste kiss being romantic when the girl has already asked you to throw her up against the wall and bang her like a barn.
I believe the PG phrase is propositioned her or propositioned him.
That's just not. You'll have to forgive me. I was watching I was watching It's a Gundam last night or earlier today. And he's heavily affected me. Actually, I think the phrase was banger like a screen door anyway. So, you know, just so bizarre what they've done. And I'm not, I don't know. I'm trying to be fair. There's a lot to like. It's Fallout. But I just can't get beyond the bizarre things they've stuck in the show. And maybe I'm not on Reddit enough to know Redditors, because I mainly use Reddit. I go there occasionally to look at some of the groups that post art. And so I'm in there for like cool art and then I leave. I don't read Redditors' opinions because then I'd be exposed to knowing what Redditors think. And I feel like my life is miserable enough without knowing what Redditors think.
Redditors are the consummate bug people. They have all the opinions that you think they do.
Okay. Yeah, I don't need more exposed or things like that. But anyways, that's the show. And that's our show, folks, because I'm done.
Yeah, you are. It's good talking to you, man. I hope everybody in the chat enjoyed the reviews. I hope everybody listening later also enjoys them, I guess. I'm done. I'm also done for this week, Daddy Warpig. So please close us out.
All right, folks. We want to thank you for tuning in live, participating in the chat. We want to thank you for tuning in later, everyone. This has been Geek Gab. You can get us on youtube.com/geekgab. Once again, that's youtube.com/geekgab. Click follow, click like, and subscribe to get an announcement for when we're going live. We're here Mondays. 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. We're also available on the iTunes Store, on the Google Play Store, and on SoundCloud.com. Just do a search for Geek Gab. Listen to us on the device of your choice. Download us to your computer or listen to us on the web. We are signing out for today, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Boy, I messed that up. We are signing out for today, folks. Don't you worry. Don't you fret. We will be back.